The Bible reading is taken from John chapter 19, verse 18. There they crucified him, and with him two others, one on each side and Jesus in the middle. Thanks be to God. This is a passage now from Julian of Norwich. Great Droplets of Blood, chapter 7. I saw the continuing bodily vision of copious bleeding from Christ's head. The great drops of blood fell down from under the crown of thorns like beads, looking as if they came from the veins. And as they came out, they were dark red because the blood was very thick. And as it spread out, it was bright red. The profusion is like the drops of water which fall from the eaves after a heavy shower of rain and fall so thickly. And as for the roundness of the drops, they were like herring scales as they spread out over the forehead. This vision was vivid and lifelike and horrifying and awesome, sweet and lovely.
Last week, we sat at an extreme moment of Jesus' suffering, glimpsing Jesus close to death, his body wrenched by the nails, which were big, hard, and round. He was dying slowly and in utter agony. The vision of the nails hammered into Christ's hand causes Julian great sorrow and fear, but it also gives her the realization of how deeply she loves Jesus and how much he loves us. She cannot look away from his suffering. She sees that Jesus suffers with us willingly and would have suffered more. She urges us to choose Jesus in our sorrows and in our joys and challenges us to fix our eyes on him in his final moments, not to look away, but to sit and watch and wait. Julian's visions have centered so far on the cross held before her, on the crown of thorns, on the scourging that he suffered at the hands of the Roman soldiers, and the nails which bound him to the cross. And now her gaze shifts to Jesus' bleeding body. There's a real sense of time slowing down as she lingers on the copious bleeding from Christ's head. Jesus' blood has held deep theological and liturgical significance for Christians throughout history, and particularly in the medieval period. A drop of Jesus' blood had particular resonance. It was revered during the Feast of Corpus Christi, and it symbolised a celebration of the real presence of Jesus' body and blood at the Eucharist. In fact, Aquinas meditated on this precious nature of Jesus' blood, one drop of which, he says, can free the entire world. Medieval writers and artists try to evoke an emotional response to Jesus' passion, to enter imaginatively into the scene and to describe, or even paint, in the case of artists, Jesus' death in great detail, focusing on his blood. And yet in the gospel account we had this evening, did you notice again the lack of descriptive detail? It's very terse and brief, recalling the barest of facts. John tells us, simply, they crucified him. In Julian's reading from this evening, we have an evocative image, don't we, of great droplets of blood. And How did you notice how that resonates with Luke's gospel account, not read tonight, but just think to where Jesus is on his knees in the Garden of Gethsemane praying to the Father, and his sweat became like great drops of blood falling to the ground. Julian uses three very striking similes to describe Jesus' death, grounding Jesus' passion within ordinary everyday life, using again some ordinary passion icons. They're sequential and they help us move through her vision as it changes and develops. The first simile is his blood was like great drops or beads. And interestingly enough, in the older version of Julian's writing that I quoted right at the beginning of the series from a very early manuscript, the beads are pelots in that translation. And that's a very evocative word, isn't it? Pelots or pellets. When you think of pellets, what do you think of? Cannonballs, maybe? Stones? In Julian's time, it was used as a word to describe measures of flour rolled up into balls and mixed with cereal that they would eat. So pellots or beads, again, a very ordinary domestic image from everyday life. These pellots were dark red because the blood was very thick. As it spread out, it was bright red. She moves on then to develop the simile and tells us that these drops of bright red blood were like drops of water which fell from the eaves after a heavy shower of rain, falling so thickly. This is a real visceral sense of the vast quantity of blood she sees pouring from Jesus' wounds. And again, it's located within this homely experience of watching rain spilling out from over the eaves of a house, from the thatched roof running down. I don't know how many of you have been to Lavenham or even Saffron Walden. Think of those old medieval houses and just think of how rain comes down and you get a sense of what she sees. Our third simile, Jesus' blood, like herring scales. It's very striking. As for the roundness of the drops, she says, they were like herring scales as they spread out over the forehead. Now, herrings were a staple of the diet in Norwich at the time. Again, very common, sold widely. People knew what they looked like. And for chefs in those days, it was common knowledge that the scales were round, shiny, and closely linked. And when you try to prepare the fish for eating, the scales go absolutely everywhere. So again, highly evocative imagery, minute details, locating Jesus' passion within the domestic sphere, using these ordinary passion icons, beads, water rushing off the eaves, and herring scales. So Julian's vision is evoking a living reality of Jesus' passion. It's a very hard place to sit with her, isn't it? At the foot of the cross, with watching and waiting for Jesus to die. And it's not over yet. Our challenge is to remain, to continue to reflect on his suffering and dying. And maybe it's particularly difficult for us this year as we watch people suffering and dying, not only in Ukraine, but across the world. As we watch people coming on boats to the UK, drowning. And as we see people in Afghanistan, particularly women and girls, suffering because they're denied an education. And also thinking of all those who have suffered from COVID, those who have lost loved ones due to the pandemic. There is much darkness and no sense of an ending in sight. And yet, we glimpse a glimmer of hope within this vivid and lifelike and horrifying and awesome vision, as Julian describes it, which she concludes was sweet and lovely. Again, it's really surprising, isn't it, to find that she finds homely comfort in the horror and in the suffering. She adds later in chapter 7 that it truly is more joyful to me than if he gave me great gifts, because this vision shows her the humble and self-giving nature of Jesus on the cross, and she takes great comfort that Jesus enters our everyday and ordinary lives and stays with us, whatever we're going through. Maybe that resonates for us tonight. His copious bleeding is a metaphor for how much he loves us. Think back to the rain pouring over the eaves. That's how much Jesus loves us. So Julian invites us at the end of this chapter to join her at the foot of the cross, lost in wonder, love, and praise. And again, using the original Middle English, she tells us, "This showing was quick and lively and hideous and dreadful and sweet and lovely. And of all the sight I saw, this was the most comfort to me, that our good Lord is so homely and so courteously."